UST. Together, we build for boundless impact.
Here's your money briefing for Thursday, July 27th. I'm J.R. Whalen for The Wall Street Journal. When couples combine their finances, their bank account is at the mercy of both partners' spending habits. So to protect their balances, some couples have imposed spending limits.
So the spending rules gives both people a no-questions-asked threshold under which you're allowed to do your thing, I'm allowed to do my thing. If it exceeds this, let's have a conversation.
We'll talk to our personal finance reporter, Julia Carpenter, plus one woman who set and broke a spending limit with her fiancé. That's after the break.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. Robert Half is here to help. Our recruiting professionals utilize our proprietary AI to connect businesses with highly skilled talent. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Some couples trying to make ends meet but also avoid money conflicts have set spending limits for each other. WSJ personal finance reporter Julia Carpenter joins me. So, Juliet, how does this work? What kinds of purchases are couples putting a spending limit on?
The purchases that don't need prior conversation. So the purchases under $100, for example, or under $1,000 for some couples, or under $25 for other couples. Things that don't need approval or discussion for the household, something like buying a new blender or buying a piece of exercise equipment, things that won't break the bank, but also talking about them and getting them the sign off from both people would just sort of gum up the process or lead to one partner feeling restricted or somehow like held back.
That sounds very corporate.
Yes. I spoke with one couple who quite literally described themselves as the CFO and the CEO. Him being the CFO, her being the CEO, and in this case, she identifies CEO as chief entertainment officer. That she's the one who plans the activities, who books the appointments, who schedules the programming, and he's the one who looks at the budget and researches the big purchases and balances the spreadsheets, and that together, that's how they run what they call their family business, which is just the maintenance of their household and the daily life.
So what's brought couples to this point of setting up this spending rule?
There's a sense of autonomy and a sense of financial freedom that a lot of people have when they're single. Even if it's a burden, spending on your own and managing your own life and all these other things that having a partner helps with, you still feel unrestricted. You don't feel surveilled, and you feel that your money is sort of your own. When you are combining your financial life with a partner's, just by the very nature of it, you are sharing things. There's more transparency, but there's also more a sense of restriction for some people. They feel like, oh, I can't buy my favorite kombucha every day because they'll see that I'm just spending $8 for no reason. So the spending rules gives both people a no questions asked threshold under which you're allowed to do your thing, I'm allowed to do my thing. If it exceeds this, let's have a conversation.
But whether you're finding a path to a solution or not, isn't money sort of a third rail in relationships? It just seems like it stirs up nothing but trouble.
So not always. I know from previous reporting and from talking with financial therapists and financial advisors that couples who can have healthy conversations about money are often happier. And there's a lot of research out there that shows that couples who combine finances are wealthier, happier, and have higher levels of relationship satisfaction.
So if couples have this spending rule, does it matter if they're married or not?
No. What matters is that you two are not even necessarily sharing all your money, but just sharing something, sharing a goal, sharing a credit card, sharing, you know, expenses, something that enables both of you to talk more about this and also requires the transparency.
So how should people determine what that number should be?
It's very personal. I talk to couples who have levels as low as $100, and I talked to one couple who said that their level is as high as $10,000. So it's specific to what your goals are as a couple. So if you were trying to save for a given thing or pay down debt, that level might maybe be lower. If you're trying to live a certain lifestyle or not do some of those other things, maybe your level's higher. Maybe you both make more money. Maybe you make less money. The thing that all of these experts I spoke to recommended is that you both need to agree on the number and be really honest about it.
So that's how spending limits work in theory. Let's see how they work in the real world. San Francisco resident Emily Luck and her fiancé agreed on a $1,000 spending limit. So Emily, how did this spending limit work for the two of you?
At the beginning, when we first implemented it, there was this first, I would say, like 6 months where it felt a little bit strange because we just weren't used to talking to each other about different spending decisions that we were making. And so it definitely took a little bit of like, okay, I'm doing this. This is a new conversation we're having. And at this point now, a couple years into it, it's very easy. And it ends up feeling a lot more like, oh, I actually feel like, you know, a lot of the decisions we're making are as us as a team.
And what if you want to surprise each other with something that's over that spending limit? What happens then?
So this actually just happened last year. I do a lot of aerial yoga and my studio actually shut down during COVID and it has been something that I haven't been able to do. And so he really wanted to surprise me with a stand that could go inside of our apartment that would allow me to continue doing aerial yoga. But it was over that spending limit. And so I think he had gone back and forth in his head a bunch of times about whether or not he should surprise me. And then ultimately he decided to actually tell me about it, check in, make sure it was something I wanted. And for me, that felt great because I think that definitely helped me also be like, is this something I value to that degree? Yes, it is. And then I was very excited for it. So I actually think that was a great blend.
That's San Francisco resident Emily Luck. Emily, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
So Julia, this spending limit, it has to bring up some awkward situations like the aerial yoga gift dilemma we just heard about from Emily.
I know, and it's such a nice idea to think that everybody is always wanting to surprise each other or gift things to each other. But I think most of the couples I talk to, they would rather have the peace of mind that this rule brings on a daily basis and forego some of those special occasions, if that be the rule.
Honey, I saw this great gift, but it was $501. Sorry.
I know, but it also shows, like, in a way that they respect that rule then, and they want to do it. Also, I should make mention that all of the financial advisors I talked to, all of the financial therapists I spoke to for this is not a hard and fast rule. It's not like somebody slips up one time and you have to break up, or someone forgets, or somebody wants to change the limit, which has happened to one couple I spoke with. They originally had their limit at $500. They started making more money. Their life got bigger. Now their limit's $1,000. They agreed, hey, like, we can grow as we grow.
And that's a good point, that the relationship and the way money fits into it is sort of a living, breathing being. It changes shape and changes form. And as your relationship changes, maybe the spending rule might not be the magic bullet toward financial freedom.
Totally. And also, you might change. You know, what felt restrictive to you in one period of your life maybe feels necessary in another period of your life.
That's WSJ personal finance reporter Julia Carpenter. And that's your Money Briefing. I'm J.R. Whalen for The Wall Street Journal.
The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost effective, Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.